welcome to the Crashers Chat Show. So glad you guys could make it here early this morning. But hey, that's the best way to do it. Best way to start out the day is to hang out with folks like us and folks like you and to learn more about our industry. And so thank you very much for hanging out with us. And I hear you guys are hiking the hill a little later today. Might be more like rowing up the hill, possibly. Get your foul weather gear. But enjoy the time out here, because this is a real kind of a cool networking deal when you get to go up and meet your representatives. This is not every day you get to do something like this and talk to folks like this. So really take advantage of it. Soak it in. Savor it. And more importantly, take it back to your credit union and spread the word big time. This is how we work here. This is how we roll here. All right? So without further ado, we're going to get rolling with our panel. I'm going to start my little stopwatch here so we'll stay on time, because people have flights and all sorts of crazy stuff today. So I'm going to introduce our panel, and then we'll get rolling, guys. All right?
Sounds good.
First up, we have Mr. Mark C. Wright from Fiserv. Mark, what is your official title?
President Credit Union Solutions, but doesn't do what it says on the box.
And excuse me, my voice. I've done 60 interviews in the last 2 days, so I'm a little hoarse, but hey, we're hanging in there. One more hour. All right. Sitting in the middle is the lovely Tansley Stearns from Faline. How's it going, Tansley?
Awesome. So thrilled to be here.
And what is your official title there?
Chief Impact Officer.
Nice.
And that does do what it says.
Yes. Yes. And last but not least is Mr. Rob Maloche, and you have a title like no other. I think he has an extra business card for his title.
Yeah, no. Well, Chief Impact Officer is pretty cool, but no, my title is Senior Director of Global Financial Inclusion, which does sound a little dramatic, but it is my day job.
So I think we're going to start with our questions from me, and then after I'm done with the questions, you guys can take over and ask these guys some questions. Again, it's a really opportune time to take advantage of this, these folks, these resources. These are great people here. And do we have our late arrival? Yes. Anyway, without last but not least, CUNA CEO Rich Mead. How's it going, Rich?
Great.
Good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right. Hey, let's jump into it. All right. And to be proper and polite, ladies first.
Well,
alrighty.
Thank you.
All right, Filene's Tansley Stearns. All right, tell us the latest innovative programs Filene is cooking up for credit unions these days. What's going on over there, Filene?
Yeah, so just in the last 30 days, we've launched a pilot with an organization called QCash. And so QCash is a CUSO that was started by Washington State Employees Credit Union. And this is a fun story for us because the president of the CUSO, Ben Morales, is one of our original I3ers. So that full cycle of Faline is going through. And QCash is an opportunity for credit unions to offer small dollar loans to their members, an alternative to payday lending. But what they've done that I'm excited about is really captured ease of use. The platform that they're using is a mobile solution, and the member can get from application to funding in 60 seconds.
Wow.
So this pilot will be an opportunity for credit unions to test this solution, to offer that alternative to their members, and be able to see, can we make this, you know, financially viable, but also a much, much easier experience for the members. So we're really excited about
that.
Yeah,
very cool. You have another one, digital. Do you want to talk about digital strategies?
Yeah, I would love to.
Go for it.
So we had the opportunity a couple of years ago to do a pilot with Amazon, and they'd created this thing called Credit Central. And very simply, it was the opportunity for consumers to find the very best credit card for them. So much in the same way that you go to Amazon's site to find the very best book to read or a gift for a loved one, you can go to Amazon to find the very best credit card for you. And for Amazon, more choice is better, so they wanted to include credit unions in that test. And as a credit union junkie, I was over the moon about this, thinking, Amazon and credit unions, this is our chance to no longer be the best kept secret in North America. And unfortunately, most of those credit unions that tested with us really weren't equipped to take advantage of this opportunity because their sites just weren't ready. And so our digital strategies program is the opportunity for credit unions to become stronger at iteration. You know, the gift of the digital age is that we no longer have to treat our websites the way that we treat print material. Mm-hmm. And so what we do with digital strategies is help credit unions to get stronger in this digital age so that we can be where our members need us to be when they're ready.
Awesome. Tansley, you answered my two follow-up questions, so thank you.
So I'm out.
I know, she's done. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tansley Turner. Okay. So why do you think these programs are so vital to credit unions right now? I mean, this seems like a very timely opportunity for these guys.
You know, I think the commonality between those two programs is something that keeps me up at night for credit unions, which is we don't make it easy for people to do business with us. And I just think about myself with my Saturday morning hat on. The one thing that I want more than anything else in the world is for somebody to give me back my time. And that's the gift that we can give to our members. And mm-hmm. I think with both of these programs, it's the opportunity for us to look at the way that we deliver services to our members and make it vastly more simple.
Yeah. Do you have any results or anything like that you could share with these programs?
Yeah, certainly on the digital strategy side, we've had significant results. You know, the credit unions that have participated with us have seen their search engine optimization improved significantly. They've seen membership growth grow through that digital channel. Qcash is really early stage. What's interesting, though, is that Washington State Employees has been doing this for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great opportunity. Credit unions can leverage what they've learned over 10 years mm-hmm. and be able to use that to make the program stronger for themselves.
Awesome. And to wrap up, Tansley, where can folks find out more about these programs? They're so cool. And you guys are always cooking up something cool at Filene.
We try.
You try very well.
So the best place to find it is filene.org. That's our website. And we're trying to take our own medicine and make it easy to work with us digitally as well. So I invite you to go there. And if you can't find it, call me.
There you go. Yeah, it's a fantastic resource, fantastic website, all sorts of very, very progressive studies and research, all that type of stuff right there at Filene. So well done, Tansley. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Awesome.
All right, next victim coming up is Mr. Rob Miloche from Visa. How's it going, Rob?
Good.
Well done. Hey, we're not going to talk payments because we've heard a lot about payments at the show already, or tokenization or EMV or fraud, anything like that. We're going to talk about financial inclusion. And to kind of just set the foundation here, can you explain to folks what financial inclusion is?
Yeah, sure. It's really the provision of a full suite of affordable, useful financial services for everyone, with a particular focus on low-income or marginalized or excluded populations around the world. So, I mean, simply put, it's connecting people to the formal financial system. And around the world, there are about 2 billion people who are actually outside of that financial system currently.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Can you provide us with any stats or anything like that to set the stage?
Yeah, so I mean, that's 2 billion global, people who lack access to an account. That's a World Bank number. You think about that as a percentage of the population in the world, it's staggering. In the U.S., you've got about 16 million people who, according to the FDIC, are unbanked, or as I've been joking with people this week, uncredit unioned, maybe the best way to say that. And another 50 million, now this is the number you should get your head around, 50 million people who are underserved. The FDIC categorizes that if they have a share account, if they have a checking account, but they're making use of other alternative financial services outside of your credit union. Payday lending, pawn shop, check cashing, auto title loans, things like that. That's 50 million U.S. adults. And 50 million of your credit union members, more than likely, a good chunk of those. Another number that should disturb you this early in the morning, there are 45 million U.S. adults who are unscorable by the bureaus. 45 million people in the U.S. do not have a credit score. And I don't mean they have bad credit. I mean they have no score whatsoever. They have either no information in the credit system or they don't have enough information to be scored. That's 10% of the adult population are shut out from traditional credit in the U.S., 45 million people. And as you know, it's somewhat not surprising, the only way to get credit is to use credit. The only way to use credit is to have a credit score. I mean, it's a great system we've designed to lock people out, in essence, of the model. So those are two of the data points that are really staggering to me. And then what's led to our work with Filene, among that underbanked, underserved population, minority households are vastly overrepresented. Over 50% of African Americans are underserved, according to the FDIC. I mean, that's a national disgrace. Yeah. I don't know if there's any way to talk about it. 47% of Hispanic households are underbanked or underserved in the U.S. So those are really troubling, disturbing numbers that we're trying to take on.
How has this gap occurred? How did this happen? And then what can we do?
The credit invisibles gap is somewhat understandable given the way the system is designed to mitigate risk. And it's not that 45 million people are not creditworthy. They simply haven't entered the formal system. On the minority side, you know, we've spent some time trying to think about that. I don't know the answer to that. And we sort of at Filene, we decided, all right, let's not spend our time trying to figure out how we got here. Let's try to figure out how to go forward and how to address this issue.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, a giant oil tanker. How do we turn this oil tanker around? I mean, it takes a long time for the process to start. And what can these folks do out here? What can our crashers, what can you guys do to help out?
Yeah, and one thing I would say, it's important to not make some assumptions about financial inclusion. So I'd say one of the things inclusion is not, people assume, well, all right, you've got this large percentage of underserved populations. They're not using financial services. That's, of course, not true at all. They're making use of all kinds of financial services, the ones I mentioned, pawn shop, check cashing, informal lending between friends and family. So the first thing is to recognize these are active, economically active individuals. And they're not necessarily all low income either. The percent of underserved in the U.S., is at 25% if you're below $30,000 a year. But from $30,000 to $50,000 in income, it only drops to 23%. So I think the first thing is to make sure you're not making some assumptions that, oh, these are people living in poverty or who are not economically active. They're not viable customers for our credit union. Mm-hmm. We're looking at some specific programs in this incubator with Filene around small dollar lending. In fact, QCash is one of those pilot programs. Non-citizen lending, looking at some microfinance programs that you can get involved in. But I'd say I was having this conversation with one of the I3ers last night. He said, "What is it really about products?" And I said, "Well, no, candidly, that's our we're doing a product incubator with Filene that we'd love to have your credit unions become a testing organization. But I actually think it's about will. Okay. I think it's just a decision you make as an institution that we're going to address this in our field of membership. So there's certainly products. Our research surveying the credit union community, those that are minority credit unions that are doing a great job reaching these households." Said that tailored products is the key, having a really specific set of products designed for minority households with, of course, attractive pricing, which isn't necessarily hard to do compared to the pricing that people are paying in these alternative financial services market. But I really do think it's just a decision as you look across your field of membership, even if you're traditionally some sort of institutional employer base, but now you've got a community to say, we are going to reach out to these communities in our field of membership.
Excellent. What's Visa doing? I know you guys are working with Filene.
Yeah, so I mean, around the world, we're working on this problem of $2 billion underbanked with our credit union, and cooperative clients, and our bank partners, and mobile network operators, and really anyone who will sort of help address this issue. We support that through research. We do programs to reach smallholder farmers around the world and focus on women. And in the U.S., we're focused in a couple of areas. One is with our work with Filene. Around this Reaching Minority Households Incubator, which you can get information on the Filene site, as well as through Visa's various channels. And then we're also working on this problem of credit invisibles with a group called the Center for Financial Services Innovation. It's a large think tank here in the U.S., and we just did a piece of research that we'll share with you all. It's going to come out in about a month on this challenge and around how secured credit cards can be an effective means to help people build their credit score. So if you've got that secured card, shared secured card, often called in the credit union space, I encourage you to take another look at that. So those are
Indeed.
A couple of years.
Yeah, this is right in the credit union wheelhouse, big time. I mean, it couldn't be Absolutely. More on target.
No, and it was a pretty easy decision. I mean, last year was my first GAC, and I had been studying these numbers for a while. Most of my background is in sub-Saharan Africa, and then have just recently started working on the U.S. And I was at GAC for the first time last year, and was encountering these numbers, looking at the discrepancy in minority households and that overrepresentation. And it only took a few minutes to realize the answer to this challenge was to partner with our credit unions to try to address it.
Excellent. Rob, thank you very much for that. That was really cool. This great work that you guys are doing. And, of course, Filene's in the middle of it, as always. Well done, guys. All right. Well, thanks again, Rob. Thanks for those efforts and the information. And you guys get out there. I mean, this is your opportunity to really help out and make a difference. And this is and what I've been talking about and what people have been talking about the whole show is, what's the credit union difference? It's this stuff that's the difference. It's you guys stepping up and getting out there. I mean, it gives me goosebumps. I've got them right now that how you guys can really step up and help when other larger institutions aren't going to do that type of stuff. So it's the credit union. It's like I said, it's in their wheelhouse. It's in your wheelhouse. So get out there and help out and make a difference, all right? Okay, enough of the soapbox. We have CUNA's Rich Mead. How's it going, Rich?
Great. Sorry I was late again.
Well, you'll see me after class for detention?
Yes.
All right.
I assume that everything's sort of based on like CUNA booths. My instinct is to go all the way to CUNA booths in the hall, and I'm like, wait, this is not where this is. Yeah, right. Brother Billy.
All right, Rich, tell us about some of CUNA's recent changes. There's been a lot of changes within the organization, and how have they changed the organization?
So a couple things. I'm new to CUNA and frankly, to the credit union system. I've been a member of a credit union for over 25 years, but I've only been to CUNA about a year and a half. And when Jim first asked me to join CUNA, I said, sure, I'm all in, and we got there. And it's very eye-opening. It's a great organization, great history, great things you've done. But we realized very, very quickly that we needed to change it, and change it quickly. And so the first thing we did was, it's funny, the first thing we did, we got there, we heard about, well, CUNA has an office in Madison, and CUNA has an office in Washington, and CUNA does advocacy, and CUNA does compliance, and CUNA does economics and statistics. We said, after about a month, we said, stop. This has to be one CUNA. We can't be CUNA Madison, CUNA Economic Statistics, CUNA Advocacy. No, it's all one. We have to serve the credit unions all as one. We have to be advocates and do this all as one. So we've been working very hard to create a one CUNA atmosphere, climate, culture, if you will. And I think we've made some good progress. We, when we got there, our leadership team, the senior people like me, senior managers, was 24. We cut that in half. We've got half that people now leading the company. Like I said, we're streamlining. We make it one CUNA. We, this past year, we've said, you know, for too long, our focus has not been primarily on credit unions. We need to change that. We need to focus on credit unions. That's who we represent, is credit unions. And I understand that we've got our lead partners, and I don't want to dismiss them. They are our most important partners. We're working with our lead partners, but we should work with our lead partners to focus better on credit unions. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? When we go to Capitol Hill, we're not advocating for, you know, lead partners, system partners, other players. We got to advocate for credit unions, and more importantly, their members. It's not about us. It's about the constituents, 100 million members. If we can tap into that and unleash that in our advocacy, there's no stopping us, quite honestly. And in the past, I'm not sure if we really fully tapped into that 100 million member advocacy army that Jim talked about on Monday morning. We've got some great potential. We just need to really tap into it. And hopefully you guys can help us with that and energize and engage and really allow us to tap into that.
Yeah, you guys are going to be obviously hiking the hill today, or like I said earlier, probably rowing up the hill with your foul weather gear on. But you have an interesting backstory here. I want to touch on that for a second. In Jim's previous career, he was up on the hill, and you were his chief of staff. Can you give us briefly kind of an inside look on what that was like, and then how it's affecting his career and your career, and how it's affecting CUNA right now?
So Jim was the ultimate crasher. He came to Congress as the youngest member of Congress when he came in 1990. He was 30 years old. And I was a crasher, too, because I was in my young 20s. And early on in his career, he turned to me and trusted me and made me his chief of staff. And so he was a young 30-something congressman. I was a young 20-something staffer. And it was really cool. The two of us were, and at the time, you have to, this, how much has changed in these past 25 years. At the time, Congress people didn't leave. I mean, they didn't, the only time that a member of Congress left was because of health issues, you know, when the voters got sick of them. but they didn't leave, and so Jim would walk into a room, and there's all these 70 and 80 and 90-year-old members of Congress, and here he comes in as a 30-year-old, and I'm a 20-year-old, and we're like, wow, we had changes. So we tried to institute a lot of change, and frankly, he did. And now Congress, you know, you look at this current Congress, most of whom have only been elected in the last, like, 4 years. So it's a lot of turnover, a lot of things happening. And I like to think and like to say that some of that came in the wake of some of the change that Jim brought to the Congress when he was a young member of Congress. So, but the point is, it's important for you to engage. These members of Congress and their staff, yes, they may be new, yes, they may be young, but they're important, and they have power. And you can... You need to engage with them, and you need to tell them about the credit union difference to get them to act and help us, because they can do it, and they've got the power to help us. So anyway, it's critical that you're here. It's critical you go to these meetings. A couple things about the meetings just to tell you. Number one, expect the unexpected. You go up to Capitol Hill, you walk into the congressional office and they're saying, oh, there's a vote. There's a committee meeting. Something's changed. Things are changing all the time in Capitol Hill. That's okay. Get used to it. Number two, just know that your time there is brief. They may only have 15, 10 minutes, and that's okay. You need to get in a few minutes, your basic pitch. Here's what credit unions are. Here's what we need you to do quickly. That's fine. That's good. number three, it's easy to get lost up there like I get lost here. The thing about Capitol Hill that we don't have here is there are policemen and staffers and people all throughout who can help you and say, hey, I'm lost. Can you tell me where the Cannon House office building is? Or how do I get to Longworth or the Dirksen building or whatever? People will help you, so just ask. In a nutshell, that's how you can engage today, and I hope you all do hike the hill and enjoy it.
Well, the reason why I asked that question is kind of set up my next question here, is how prevalent is the credit union voice on the hill? I mean, is it really loud out there, or is it kind of like a Horton hears a who type of thing? Are you there? You know, what can they expect when they go up there? Are the representatives going to go, oh, yeah, I've heard of credit unions, and yeah, you guys do great work? Or is it like, a credit what? So what can they expect, and how can they be loud?
it's a good news, bad news, right? So there's credit unions for the House representatives, congressional, federal, in every House building in the Capitol. The U.S. Senate has a credit union in every Senate building. So it's present. It's out there. Unfortunately, and I'm not being critical of my friends at either credit union there, but they have to serve both parties, all takers, so they don't like to really engage in advocacy, and I get that, and I'm not asking them to do it. So they're familiar, which is good, but they don't see the direct one-to-one engagement until you come to the Capitol, and this is really powerful. This week, we've got almost 5,000 credit union advocates here in Washington. That's huge. No other association, no other industry does it like we do it. So I just was telling you yesterday about the example. Mm-hmm. There are 60 advocates from Hawaii who came here this week. Unbelievable. From Hawaii. They can't fit in the congressional offices. So they are going to the Capitol, and their members of Congress are coming to see them. How huge is that, that this advocacy group is getting representatives and senators to come to them? That's awesome. That's power. We need to harness that and say, that's great you came to us. Now do something for us. Here's what we need you to do. We need reg relief. We need data security. We need to preserve our tax status. So there's a lot of great things happening this week, and just ask you to jump in and join in those great things.
Yeah, this kind of segues my wrap-up question here. Short of having a mosh pit in the rotunda, I mean, specifically, what can these guys do? Is there like step one, step two, step three? Just super brief.
Here's what gets the attention of members of Congress. It's voters. It's, you see a crowd like this, so wow, that's voters. So go there and go there in power, go there strong. But most importantly, this isn't a one day a year thing. You go here, you come one day and say, oh, okay, I did it. They should listen to me. No, you got to follow up. You got to go today, engage, talk to them, but then follow up. See them back home. Go to their town meetings. Go to parades. Go, engage. And not be there one day, but constantly be there and follow up. Hey, remember me? I met you in Washington. Hey, you, I see you in the parade today. Remember me? I'm a credit union. I talked to you about rate burden, or I talked to you about our tax status. So it's not a one-day affair. I hate to say it, but it's really 365 days, constant engagement, constant follow up. You meet with them today, follow up with an email, follow up with a letter. Thank you for meeting with me. Remember what we talked about. It's a constant ongoing engagement, but this is a good time in person to meet them face to face and then follow up and keep engaging.
Thank you very much, Rich. It's like applying for a job. Follow up. If you want it badly enough, you're going to follow up and you're going to take that extra yard to do it. All right, Mark. We have 1 minute, and you get to answer 5 questions. Okay. Can you do it?
Is the place on the panel reflective of position in the polls?
I have no idea. We can ask them. All right, I'm just kidding.
I know.
All right. Hey, technology is so important. It's all around us. I'm noticing a lot of Apple Watches on the panel and in the audience, and so a cool display of technology. So tell us the state of technology in Credit Union State, because I mean, this is kind of what makes the world go round.
All right, so in 1 minute or less, Mike, right?
Take
so
your time.
Tara, do you know how to work the watch? Okay, let's talk. You can help me. First of all, this is the youngest group I think I've ever presented to or been a part of, so thank you.
Woohoo!
And if I may say so, it's the best looking group I've ever
met. Wow, all right.
And Anita, you're a Twitter legend. I'd love to get a selfie with you later. Is that all right? Because you're trending. Anyway, I think the biggest thing I could say, Mike, in answer to the question is two words: digital engagement. We have seen a phenomenal shift in how financial services is conducted over the last 10 years. No coincidence, Mike, the launch of key products that have really changed the game. I mean, you guys know this better than I do. 2006, we'd just seen YouTube launched. We just saw the launch of Twitter. The iPhone had not been launched yet. I know that's hard to believe. Look at him. Look at him texting there. The iPad had not been invented yet, right? And yet today, those vehicles and those devices are fast becoming the primary way that consumers access financial services. And in my mind, that is going to get even more prevalent as we move forward over the next 5 to 10 years. So I think for me, Mike, it's all around digital engagement.
Mm-hmm. As credit unions, are we behind the curve? Are we ahead of the curve? Or are we the curve? Are we in the curve right now?
You know, I think credit unions get a bad rap for this, because the good news is companies like ours at Fiserv, we provide outsourced technology services, right, as many as you know. So as long as people like us are doing our jobs, don't say anything. As long as people like us are doing our jobs, you guys should be fine. Because the ultimate, I think, model of credit union efficiency is to share services. And whether you share services together or whether you share it through vendors or technology partners, you should be challenging those companies, including my own, to make certain that you are doing the things to remain relevant with your members. I often say that, and Rich may or may not just agree with this, credit unions should worry much less about becoming insolvent and much more about becoming irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And therefore, I think the biggest challenge, Mike, I think to answer your question specifically, we're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
The credit union movement is doing fine. You know, my good friend from Visa will tell you that you guys are on the forefront of things like mobile payments. You were more active in Apple Pay than banks. You have delivery channel access and services that would match most of the larger banks in this country. You just don't spend $2, $3 billion a year on technology like some of those individual banks do. Some of them individually spend more than the movement does on technology.
Wow.
Right? So having said all that, this whole shared services concept that you guys are a part of and is part of your culture is helping you stay current. And I think that's the key.
Yeah, and it levels the playing field too. It doesn't really matter how big you are, how small you are. This technology levels the playing field. It puts us right there in the mix.
Absolutely.
In the mix. Tell us about, you're all about core technology, obviously. Why should the Crashers care about core technology? Why is it important to them
to
us?
I'm going to put a little twist on the question, Mike,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Sure,
because if you'd said to me 10 years ago, what is core technology? I would have said to you, oh, it's a technology that allows you to process transactions for your members and keep score, right? Whether it's general ledger or you know, do your daily balancing, we would tell us, right? So we know this stuff. But core processing today is vastly different than it was 10 years ago. What core processing is today is the center of an ecosystem that is part of the technology offerings and applications you're giving to your members. And if you want to think about it in a way, Mike, it's sort of like a hub and spoke model, where in my opinion, core, first of all, is far less important and prevalent in that ecosystem than it was 10 years ago. And in fact, all the applications that wrap around core are becoming the focus. And I think the key for you guys is to make certain that all of your technologies interoperate with each other very effectively and efficiently, and give your members the best possible chance to get great service. So to me, Mike, it's fast become the center of the sort of ecosystem of technologies that credit unions have to offer.
Yeah. Wrap-up question for you here.
Yes, of course.
I see technology as a double-edged sword. Obviously, it levels the playing field. But how do we keep up with it? I mean, especially the smaller credit unions who don't have the resources that a billion-dollar credit union has. They have the resources to kind of research and watch the horizon and stuff. Right. But, you know, a $10 million credit union, a $5 million, how do they keep up? This is just, it's dizzying is the word that comes
really
to my mind.
Is. You know, I'm privileged to serve 2,400 credit unions every day. About 1,400 of those are below $50 million in assets. And let me tell you something. They can't buy what our largest clients are buying. And they can't innovate and customize technology the way those larger clients are doing it. So to Mike's question, they have to rely on collaboration and shared technology services through whatever vehicle they access those. CUSOs, I'm a huge, huge fan of CUSOs. Mm-hmm. Sounded a bit like Trump there, didn't I? Huge fan.
Huge.
I love them. They're great.
But they're the best.
Rich, this is catching. I better get off stage. this is kind of evening. I'm a huge, huge fan of CUSOs. I think that shared services and the innovation that Filene is fostering, and we're proud to be a diamond sponsor of Tansley and her work, is the way to go. Because, guys, you know, I was talking to a $17 million credit union from New York last night. The CEO cannot afford to buy the things that Bank of America buys. They just can't. So to Mike's point, it's all about figuring out ways you can level the playing field. And guess what, in closing, Mike, in mm-hmm. answering your question, mm-hmm. there's one thing you guys have that they don't have. You have a philosophy and a way of doing business that they just can't match. And let me tell you something, and it's true, new generations like you are all about social engagement, they're all about giving back, they're all about doing good in the world, and that's why I think credit unions, outside of technology, Mike, are so well positioned for success.
Well done. You did that in a minute and 5 seconds.
Not bad.
Well done.
My microphone fell off. I'm falling apart.
You are a man. All right. Let's. What's that?
I mentioned Trump. And that was it.
3 minutes? 3 questions. All right. We were going to open up the floor to 3 questions. We have our first candidate. Step up to the microphone right there.
Hi. My name is Lauren Kolb. I'm with True North Federal Credit Union. My question is for Rich Mead, but really anyone could answer. We've been following the NCOA discussion on member business lending regulation changes, which were recently approved and we do consider a win. But we know that some regulations have unintended consequences. So just was curious if you could comment on potential adverse impacts of the regulation changes, if there are any.
Thank you. That's a great question. And yes, there are always unintended consequences and adverse reactions. And that's why in our 360-degree advocacy, we try and look at this from all angles, not just the linear and what's the immediate impact, what's the long-term impact. And that MBL rule is a good example of that. On the one hand, the regulators have said, we're going to give you some more flexibility under our law, and we're going to allow you to participate in more loans than you ever have before, which is great. But with that participation and with that flexibility comes some more responsibility. So the governance, the boards of these credit unions have more accountability, more responsibility to make sure these credit unions are doing this in a responsible way. The credit unions themselves have to figure out how to, again, better cooperate, network, how to participate and share those loans in a new and different ways. So with the responsibility or with the flexibility comes more responsibility. So it's kind of a little bit of a double-edged sword.
Next question. Be brave. Come on up.
Good morning. Thanks for coming. I'm Courtney Angeli. I'm from Schools First, and my question is for Rob. You mentioned a pretty staggering statistic of underserved individuals with incomes between, I believe, $30,000 and $50,000 per year. What's been the biggest challenge in engaging those individuals?
Well, I think it's, in part, it's the competition, candidly. And by that, I don't mean MasterCard or American Express. I mean this embedded this culture of alternative financial services. And then once people start to use payday lending and use auto title, they often get trapped in these debt cycles and get caught in that. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges is those services that are out there as opposed to the ones you're offering. And once people are in them, it's often very difficult to get out. There's also, we have to be candid about the fact that there also is, still a mistrust, right, of financial institutions, even of credit unions, for individuals who are outside of that mainstream. So that can be another challenge that's out there. But I really do think that the biggest challenge we face is probably alternative financial services. But once people discover to use the tagline, the credit union difference, I think it's a matter of making sure that their whole portfolio of services is with you as opposed to just a single sort of account.
Excellent. One more question.
Good morning. Thank you guys for being here again. We appreciate it. My name is Raphael Wimsey with Commonwealth Credit Union. My question is broad, but I'll try to. It's at all four of you. In the credit union industry, we're obviously trying to implement financial literacy, right? So basically, with technology moving as it is, it's moving the needle, it's in the forefront of everything. How do we simplify? You said there's 50 million people underserved, and it's not necessarily poverty as much as it is they're not getting the right resources. They're not being introduced to it. So how do we simplify being creatures of habit? Right. How do we make that habit for those people?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and please, I mean, anybody jump in, but absolutely. I think you have to embed the education and the literacy inside the products and inside the technology. It's really in that decision-making moment where people need the information. It's sort of a running joke about this is we need the Fitbit of financial health. We need that reminder of what it is we're doing. And so spend management tools and other kinds of alerts, visibility to your account balances, your credit score. The research we did around credit invisibles, what they're most looking for is constant access to that credit score to see how they're improving it. So I agree with you, it's got to be embedded. And I think also, you know, we all benefit from this, taking some of the decision out of your hands, right? So you're trying to, so there's numbers around the percentage of Americans who lack, if they ran into a $400 emergency, right, don't have the savings to cover that expense. In part because we haven't digitized enough savings tools where a portion of money is just going directly into an account that you never touch. I mean, that's why we have 401ks. That's why, you know, we don't, if you were, and again, this is true for many Americans, are paid in cash, right? Or paid with a check and they go to a check casher and now you've got that lump sum of money. Well, how many of us with a lump sum of money in our hand think, you know, the thing I really want to do is save for the long term? Because on the minority household piece, 30% of U.S. households are minorities, but they only hold 8% of total deposits. 8% of retirement accounts, and about 10% of the total wealth. So part of it is we need to automate those decisions for people so they can set up a share account and it can just, a portion goes immediately into it and we don't touch it. And then in those moments of decision making, we need to provide them those sort of digital tools. Of course, with a base of financial literacy at the base of that. But yeah, I agree. A part of it is an automation of just taking some of these decisions away from that crunch moment when people's resources don't match up to their expenses.
The other thing that I would just add, I think we get really excited within credit unions about financial literacy, and I think it's super important. But I would also say, and I said this to one of the groups of crashers earlier this week, I worry sometimes that we don't move financial literacy into action. Because to me, it's very similar to weight loss. We are all very, very aware of what it takes to lose weight. We put less food in our mouths and we exercise more. It doesn't mean that we don't have an obesity epidemic in this country. And I think it's very similar with financial literacy and turning that into action. You know, how do we put the tools in their hands so that people can know, okay, how do I make these small changes and reward them for that, maybe gamify it, make it fun and engaging? And I think we've got to think about financial literacy differently. It's not just a class. It's not just come in and spend an hour listening to us drone on. How do we, again, at those moments in time when somebody's about to make a decision, help them to make the right one and continue to encourage that in small increments that are livable?
And I think that's right. You know, I always thought, by the way, it was more food and less exercise, but never mind. I think to just close that off, Mike, the virtualization of literacy is really important. What I mean by that is you would be stunned by how many people are underserved or unbanked but have mobile phones. You'll be stunned by how many people will pay their mobile phone or cell phone bill before they choose to pay other bills. And so to Tansy's point, my good friend's point, the gamification and sort of virtualization of literacy, I think, is a huge opportunity.
Rich, you want to wrap it up?
If I can.
Yeah, go for it.
Maybe a little controversial. How many of you guys have student loans?
Oh, my.
How many of you guys have taken out your student loans since 2010? All right. The federal government is the largest consumer credit provider in the country. Probably didn't know that. The Department of Ed issues more debt, more credit than anyone else in the country, any big bank, anyone else. Student loans are a huge issue. Student loan and student loan debt is a huge issue. So that's something, and you talk about, you know, putting this into action. We need to put this into action. We need to really reach out and say, you know, what's happened in the past has happened in the past. So maybe you took out that loan. But did you know that you can get a better rate than the 8.6 the department is charging you? Do you know 6.8, their lower rate, really isn't that great in this low interest rate environment? We need to take actions to really work with, on a one-on-one basis, individuals to say, let's improve your credit health, let's improve your financial situation, let's do what's best for you, not what's best for the government or best for the financial institution. What's best for you as a creditor?
Indeed. Great message to end on, guys. So thank you so much, Rich, Rob, Tansley, Mark. Well done, guys. And before we start, let's give a round of applause to your fearless leader, James Marshall, for organizing this whole thing. And last but not least, let's thank you guys for being here and making an impact. Now I'm going to sound like a football coach. Now go out there and get them! All right. Thanks, guys. Well done. Well done, Mark. Good job. Yeah.